Flowers Kiss and Miss by Left Side Down. Chapter 1. Gold. Lily's wedding band was rose gold, Narcissa's white gold. A promise, a vow, till death do us part. She's been passive too long, hesitant too long, afraid too long. Andromeda showed her a way. She didn't follow. Instead, she stayed, finding only that her feelings were not malleable as gold, but eternal as gold. 3 decades later, 2 wars later, there's still only one for her. It's easy enough to deal with him. Malfoy. She holds his ring in her palm and doesn't flinch as it turns into black gold, into ash. Now, to figure out how to revive her. Chapter 2. Waterfall. Water, to her, is quiet and still. The Great Lake's a mirror, reflecting calm skies to all watching from the sanctuary of the shore. Light ripples regal through the common room windows, swirling patterns across the carpet. Water is silvery arcs bringing stone sculptures to life, is sprinkling showers, beckoning spring blooms. If Narcissa's water, Lily's her water-bearer. Water is speeding, careening, leaping over the edge, taking a plunge, crashing into the rocks 50 feet below and coming undone, not shattering, but breaking free. Water is thundering, like the blood in her ears as she leans forward, as their lips. Chapter 3. Darkness. It's easy to hide in the dark. It's pinkies in corridors, kisses behind statues, sneaking through dormitories under Knight's cloak. It's prefect meetings where Narcissa sits beside Evans because she can't let Goyle, Parkinson, or Avery sit there, can she? Evans might be a mudblood, but she's also a girl, and girls look out for each other. So it's bumping ankles, wandering fingers, scuff marks on Narcissa's patent shoes, and a wet patch in her panties. It's making out against the restricted section shelves because a Slytherin daughter of black and a mudblood Gryffindor? They have more in common than you'd think. Chapter 4. Lucius has a new diary. She picks it up, because there isn't much to do. Needlepoint? Pregnant, pure-blood women aren't allowed sharp objects. Tea functions? No, pregnant women oughtn't drink so much tea. Abraxan writing? Don't even think about it. And so she journals, reads, journals some more. She has the baby, and even with house elf help, it's weeks, nearly 2 months, before she gets to society news. The first thing she sees sends her, "Dear Diary," her script is shaky, "Lily Evans, Potter, had her baby. It's a boy." The words fade out, one by one. "His name is..." Chapter 5. Gumdrop. "These are from James Potter." Lily tosses a bag of multicolored gumdrops onto the bed between them. "These," Narcissa purrs, proffering a porcelain plate of ice mice, "are from Evan Rosier." Lily takes one and bites into it, head first. "These are from Benji Fenwick." Lily aims a chocolate wand at her. They wrestle for it. "And this is from Severus Snape." It's an intricate, licorice-sculpted snake, which Lily glares into an unrecognizable puddle of red and black. There's icing sugar across her cheek, and chocolate on her brow. Her eyes are glittering. Her lips taste of a million flavors. Chapter 6. Quaffle. "Such a barbaric sport!" It's Narcissa's favorite lily, pink and breathless. Narcissa hums, taking Lily's gloves. "Broken noses, arms, stupid, and they think they're such heroes. Yes, Narcissa unwinds the red-striped scarf. Nonsense. And the rules. Bonkers. Do say more. She strokes the hollow of Lily's neck, and her cloak flutters to the floor. Next, buttons. What's the point of chasers? Only the snitch matters. Sis, oh, they're doing it all wrong. Chasing the wrong thing. Narcissa pauses just long enough to reply. Winning the battle, losing the war, murmurs Lily faintly. Cheers in the distance, drowned out by their moans. Chapter 7. Mermaid. That redhead Gryffindor who hangs with that Snape boy, Evans, has some awfully odd ideas. She thinks mermaids are red-haired. She thinks they sing. She thinks they're beautiful. Snape, to his credit, does his best to correct the worst of her many queer muggle notions, but no matter the number of times she sees them from the Slytherin common room windows, no matter how they shriek and snarl, bare their teeth, shake their hair at her, she always comes back, laughing, eager for more. Maybe she's got a different definition of beauty. Maybe she's always been able to love monsters. Chapter 8. Sunshine. It's easier to hide in the light. The last day of the school year is consummate chaos. The clear day only intensifies the post-exam fervor, and amidst the last-minute packing, panicking, and pranking, no one notices their absences. 10 minutes after the train pulls away, they're crammed into a tiny lav, noon sun glinting off porcelain surfaces and metal edges. They trade bright kisses and brighter laughs, and later, no one finds these ripped-up scraps in the bin. A delight to have in class. Friendly, charming, prodigiously talented. Well-liked by all. I expect great things from her in the future. Chapter 9. Dirt. Little Draco hasn't been sleeping well. The healers assure her it's normal at 16 months. It doesn't help. She still feels lower than dirt. And so, she's pacing the garden at dawn when the message arrives, a scrap of singed parchment appearing in a bolt of lightning. Its news is earth-shattering. 3 killing curses, and the result? Her knees go weak, and she falls to the ground. Cheek warm. Wrist pulse strong and steady. Beneath the eyelid is a pupil dilated and darting, its iris piercingly green. From the soil of the forest, she rises. "He is dead!" she shouts, triumphant. Chapter 10. Dance Floor. The chessboard is black and white. The dance floor is brown, marbled with beige. The battlefield is gray cobblestones. It's push and pull, call and response. Sidesteps, dodges, near misses. Take this, handle that, don't slip up now, dear heart. Meeting each other time and again, in different masks, different bodies. Alternately predator and prey, offense and defense. The game changes on a dime, the music in a beat. Can you keep up? Have you grown? Are you ready? The chessboard is black and white, the dance floor marbled brown and beige. The battlefield is mossy gray cobblestones soaked in red, red, red. Chapter 11. Fizzy. Stolen moments with her are bubbles of exhilaration in an ocean of tedium. Like after potions on Wednesdays, she can blame her breathlessness and arithmancy on scaling 7 flights of stairs, 9 on alternate weeks. Like in the 3rd-floor girl's bathroom. In return for redoing Lily's hair, Narcissa makes her wait 10 minutes before leaving for Sluggy's dinner. Later, when Lily sets down her champagne flute and sneaks away, Narcissa drains hers in one mouthful and follows. One slipped-off sundress, one cannonball dive. An ankle tug, a yelp. The heavens are crashing down around them, but they are breathing underwater. Chapter 12. Dragon. May I have this book, since you're not using it? Narcissa doesn't look up. Who's this whelp, and how dare she? Doesn't she know she's addressing Slytherin royalty? Bella's barely been out of school 2 years. Perhaps she does need a reputation of her own. It's for 3rd years, twap, DeLuca sneers. I just wanted to read about dragons. Her tone's fierce, defiant, only the slightest waver. Let her have it, Narcissa says, airily, half-finished sentence forgotten, but eyes never leaving her quill. Perhaps Bella has a point, but maybe just this once. Draco, she manages. His name is Draco. Chapter 13. Red. Her red hair clashes terribly with her school robes. It's ugly, and Narcissa Black doesn't like ugly things. But she's a paper-winged moth to Lily's flame, drawn in despite her horror. Lily's hat is too big, and her scarf's the stuff of nightmares. It's uglier than store-bought, than even Snape's secondhand scrap. Where did she get that? Was she blind? But seeing red is preferable to looking into Lily's eyes. Eyes that beckon, that promise death. Her hair is garish against her bloodless, too pale cheeks. It's ugly, and Narcissa Black can't abide ugly things. So, she makes them beautiful again. Chapter 14. Locke. Locked away, a single rose, crimson corollas atop a long stem, slightly sticky, spindle-studded. Received. A silver-chained pendant, a hanging heart of cold onyx. Shut away. A pale princess, their fragile flower, their final filly. The breaking comes swift and harsh and terrible, childish fantasies smashed into smithereens. Excised, a doe's heart, removed, still beating from its cracked chest of a cage. Sealed away. Dead, not sleeping, in a pastel blue floral dress and heels so high as to touch God. There are fireworks. The wedding had been a joyous occasion, too, Narcissa recalls. Released. Hope. A breath. Expiration. Refound. Regained. Recaptured. Hope.